super fans, pop culture purists, welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. I'm closing out Terrificon week here on the show. Five episodes featuring a cavalcade of stars that bring our favorite characters to life. All guests at the recent comic book convention, Terrificon, which takes place every August in Uncasville, Connecticut. Man, I always have fun there. I've been taking the show on the road there for quite a while now. Today, I am bringing you the audio of my Q&A with Gotham's gangster bad guy turned supervillain, Drew Powell. Now, Drew started on the hit TV show Gotham in 2014 as Butch Gilzine. He was a member of the Falcone crime family. I went through a lot of changes over several seasons. If you keep up with the show, you know Butch has been all over the place. But, man, none greater than last season, the changes that he took place with his character. His character was killed off, and then he returned as the DC Comics supervillain Solomon Grundy. That was so cool when that happened. Killed off again at the end of last season, but will he return somehow for the fifth and final season of Gotham? We know Solomon Grundy's around. I mean, you know, he's kind of a zombie, so he comes back. You know, is Drew Powell going to be coming back to Gotham for the final season? We're going to be talking about that and much more in the Q&A. Let's not waste any time. Take a listen to this, and then I'm also going to play a little bit of the scene where Grundy premiered on the show, and then you will hear my exclusive Terrificon Q&A with Drew Powell.
Born on a Monday, Christmas on a Tuesday, married on a Wednesday, grew us on Friday, died on Saturday, buried on Sunday.
Sweet Mother of Mary. Never seen nothing like him before. White as a picket fence. Easy. We ain't gonna hurt you.
What happened to your drawers, big fella?
Easy.
We're gonna get you, you freak!
Who are you?
Solomon Grundy, born on Monday.
Joining us today is a talented actor. He has been wreaking havoc in Gotham City for the past 4 years. Starting off as Butch, more recently as the classic DC Comics villain Solomon Grundy. I don't know if he was born on a Monday, but I know he's with us here on Sunday. Mr. Drew Powell from Gotham. Let's hear it for him as he makes his way to the stage. Are you having fun at Terrificon? Yep, you're right there.
Right here? Is
this me? Yep.
Hi,
this is yours there.
Hi.
Good afternoon. They had a rock band yesterday on the opposite side of this, so like everybody had to use their outside voices on that one. So,
If that was the case today, I would definitely stop and sing. Like I will answer your question after I sing "Welcome to the Jungle."
Well, oh, are you? Look, apparently there's a lot of singing. The last panel we had the Golden Girls theme song.
Oh, that's a good one. But that's already been done. We need to do something different.
But why does everybody know this?
It's a good song. You know another good song.
Baby, if you ever wonder.
You young kids, look it up.
Wonder whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, WKRP.
Yeah, baby.
That's right, man. Look, you want to bust out some Family Ties or something? Or
yeah. So let's do this all day.
Yeah, for the next hour, like, we're just going to do TV theme songs or something. Does Gotham have a TV theme song? Like, what is Gotham?
No, it's just like scary, spooky music.
It's just like, wow.
Although I will say that they've used music to good effect in our show. One of my favorite uses of music was they used a song called It's All in the Game, which is one of those great. Who sang that? I can't remember who sang it, but it's one of those great kind of 50s doo-wop songs. And it was when I was in the first season, when I was in the car with Saviano, and we're talking about meat, and then I shoot him in the face. Because it's Gotham.
Because it's Gotham.
You talk about meat, and then you shoot him in the face. But then they played that song as like at the end, and you see the shot, you see the blood splatter from afar, and then the car, I get back in my car, and I drive away with this song. And it was just great.
When you were shooting it, did you know what the song would be, or was it one of those ones after? Because we talked to Pawn Clementief, and she mentioned about how they had earbuds in, because the soundtrack is so crucial to Guardians of the Galaxy, so they have the songs playing. Did you know anything?
No, you know what? Actually, now that you mention it, the director played, he used his iPhone and played some music. and held it in for the rehearsal so I could have an idea.
So does that kind of get you, but as an actor, does that kind of like get you into the spirit of the scene? Does
absolutely.
That help you?
I mean, as a music lover, but absolutely, for me, music is huge, so that was... that was really helpful.
Do you listen to anything? Like, so you're in the trailer getting ready for, setting up. Do you listen to anything to kind of get you in the mood for filming? Because it's a very specifically themed show. I mean, it's very dark, it's very gritty, and you're probably not like that in real life, I'm guessing. Not usually that dark.
No, I'm not.
So what do you do to get into? And again, in all fairness, Butch isn't that. Butch is kind of like he's so misunderstood.
He's a brute with a heart of gold.
He is.
Yeah,
he is.
No, I use music all the time. Whatever the project is, I just did a movie up in Montana about Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, and I was up there living my country life. I had the beard and the dogs in the back of the truck, and the whole thing. And so I was listening to a lot of old time country and some blues and it was wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I definitely choose music as a soundtrack to kind of get me in the mood.
Okay, just a
Gotham's a hard one. Gotham's like a fever dream. Like I think Robin sang an Amy Winehouse song at one point, and then we've had standards, and we've had when we were in the bar, there was always this kind of some crazy band, oftentimes all female, which was cool, and they'd be doing like weird covers of different songs. Like music is really fascinating in our show.
Yeah, I would imagine Gotham would be a tricky one to be able to do that. First of all, congratulations. I guess it's kind of bittersweet too as we go through this, but congratulations not only on being on Gotham, but for getting to take on this past season one of the most iconic characters ever in DC. I mean, is it 1944? Does Solomon Grundy go back to?
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean,
yeah.
So congratulations on that. I know we've got season 5 coming up. Is it 10 episodes? Are they doing 10 episodes? And then everything's going to wrap up. So again, bittersweet.
Yeah.
How does that impact you as an actor? Because now, I know they did this on Lost, because they were going, then all of a sudden they announced an endgame.
Right.
So does that impact how you're moving forward as an actor?
I think so. I mean, I'm not a part of season 5, unfortunately, but I know from talking to my friends that are still over there that there is this kind of sense of.
Can you promise that us that you're not a part of?
Well, no, I can never, not in this show. I can never promise. You, I'm not telling you something.
Can you promise me anything?
Look, it's Grundy, as John Stevens says. It's built. It's baked into the character that you can always come back. So,
yes.
And I don't know who was. I was. Oh, there! My man over there was saying, it's like when the episode aired, he tweeted, "Throw Butch in the swamp." I'm like, absolutely. So, but at this point, I mean, look, I think if I'm being honest, they got a lot of storylines to tie up, and my storyline's kind of tied up already. So.
Yeah, but didn't that happen to Butch like all the time? Because he as you get towards season finales, he's not good in season finales.
Yeah,
right?
No, exactly. Bad stuff happens.
Bad stuff happens.
Yeah,
to
think about
Butch.
That. End of season one. He gets he shoots fish and then gets whacked in the head and the fish goes over. Season 2, what was the end of that season? Oh yeah, he gets freaked out because fish comes back.
Yeah,
he's got the Gatling gun.
And when you were I'm trying to remember what season
that was.
You're,
season 2.
That
yeah.
was season 2.
That
okay.
was the finale, but still, no hand.
Right.
Season
no
3
hand.
Gets shot in the forehead.
Yeah.
Season
dead.
4 he gets shot in the heart.
Shot in the heart.
I never
dead.
Thought about that. Yeah.
Right. So that would stand to reason that season 5, and plus you're a zombie at this
it's
point.
It's gonna be like they're just gonna tag it after the show's over. They're just gonna do a little tag where they just have me just getting shot somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe blown up.
Hashtag kill Butch. Hashtag Butch Lit.
Just shoot him with a bazooka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So amazing on that. So congratulations on bringing that.
It was a great run, and I've so many people this weekend have been so sweet and you know, we are commiserating on the loss. But I keep when in the actual last day of filming happened, you know, it was really hard. It was Robin and Jessica and I were, and we just took us forever to get through it without crying. You know, we were just it was an emotional thing. You know, you spend 4 years with these people. We are absolutely abnormally close as a cast, which doesn't happen very often, and that's really special. But also particularly Robin and I became good buddies and are good buddies, and so that was a hard scene to shoot. And but, you know, when I finish, and we finished the whole thing, and I'm kind of in the van driving back home, this quote just kept resonating in my head of that from Dr. Seuss, which is, you know, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. And that really was kind of carried me through, because it would have been easy to be sad and angry and bitter about being done before it's time, but I wasn't. I was mostly grateful of having this incredible experience.
And I think you mentioned about that scene with Robin, too. What is going on, doesn't that play into it, too? Because there's almost an element, too, where he says, he looks at you at one point and just like, I'm sorry I have to do this.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I'm sorry I have to end this.
Yep.
So is it some of that emotion of
absolutely
working
yeah.
into it as well?
Yeah.
Because
well,
like
poor Robin has to kill a
I'm
lot of people.
To take you out,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, he's
and you're off the show.
He's a
yeah.
guy, too. I feel so sorry for him. But
he's like the nicest guy on the planet. I know.
Is. I know. But, you know, it's too bad. They did cut out. The end of the scene is, you know, they take Tabby out, and then he walks over to me as I'm dead on the ground or dying and says, goodbye, old friend. And it was this lovely moment, and I was really sorry they cut that out.
They did, because it was just like a scene,
yeah,
there's like
yeah,
some trickling blood or something, and then it's...
Which was CGI, by the way.
Right. No. Oh, that was? You didn't have any, like, squib?
No, I was like, where'd that come from?
Wow. I don't remember putting a squib in my mouth. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. So yeah. I was really, really sorry that they... I don't know what their reasoning was.
Did you
was.
Ask?
No, I didn't, because I was gone by the time it
yeah.
aired. So, that's what happens a lot of times, is that you shoot this stuff, and then until it airs, you don't really know, you know, what's in and what's out.
Yeah.
For example, the bazooka shot, which is still one of, the fan favorites of all the series, you know, I didn't think that was going to work at all. We were freezing cold. It was the middle of the night. We're out on Long Island. I'm like, you know, couldn't feel my face. And then I have this like bazooka that's obviously not real, but there's all this pyrotechnics and like you could go blind, so don't look at it. And like all this. And then they took this meat puppet and literally, because it was filled with meat, and exploded the thing. And that was Azrael. Like it was, you know, raw meat all over the place. And so it was like, how is this going to work? And then you see it, and it's cut together with the music and the whole thing, and it's like, whoa, that was awesome. so yeah, you know, and so sometimes it's really a positive thing, and then sometimes it's you know, for whether it's time or I don't know why they cut that part out, but it was a really nice moment to kind of put an end on that.
Well, did they want to make it, maybe just even moving forward, they need to make sure he goes all the way sinister.
Yeah.
So, you don't want to have too much compassion. I guess that's the trick of this, is that yeah. it's easy to have compassion for somebody like that, but they're an evil, twisted, horrible
yeah,
person, and
exactly.
we need to be rooting against them, because Batman has to come in and save
yeah.
the day at some point.
Exactly.
So.
If that was the reason, my counter to that would be, though, what Robin has done, I think, particularly, but what makes this version of Oswald Cobblepot so, I think, compelling and interesting and dark and twisted is that he does, he's this kind of, you know, the fact that he can, like, legitimately, because Butch was one of his only friends, like, mm-hmm. you know, as you go through the series, like, Butch was about the only guy, even though the first part of it was because of mind control, you know, he's
thing.
Like a small thing.
Small thing.
But, you know, there was a real legitimate relationship there, and so for him to be able to be so cold to kill and then feel bad about it, like, that to me is more interesting and sinister.
Is he approaching these things as that conflicted? Do you talk about it with him ahead of time? Like, does he approach it as, I am conflicted about this, or
yeah,
I want to get to the penguin as
well? Yeah, no, I think so. I think it's, you know, this is different than any other version that's ever been
mm-hmm.
done. We're doing our own thing, and I think, yeah, I would say that, I don't know, I won't speak for him, but my guess would be that, yeah, that's part of what's made his version so interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you folks have questions, we're going to throw that out to the audience here in a second. So think about your questions with Gotham or whatever you want to talk about. We can talk about a lot
or
of different
TV
things.
Theme songs.
TV theme songs. If you want to throw some out, we'll take requests as we go through here. I'm going to back up a little bit, though. Born in Indiana, we talked a little bit yesterday, too.
Yeah.
So you're a Colts fan. We talked
oh,
a little bit about you're gearing up for football,
yeah,
right? You're
yeah,
getting
I'm
ready
gearing up for football.
How's your quarterback?
He's better. He's better. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm feeling very positive.
Okay. So, sports fan growing up, how early does this go back? And then What were you into just as a kid? What were some of the things that inspired you?
Yeah, you know, I was one of those kids that kind of liked it all. My family always called me the cake eater because I always wanted to have my cake and eat it too. Also, I like cake, but but no, really, I was into a little bit of everything. I was into sports. I was into drama. I was into, you know, student government. I did, you know, like a little bit of every, you know, I wanted to taste it all, as it were, and. So that was what was cool about that was it was hard to put me in a spot like, oh, he's with the jocks or he's with the nerds or he's with the band or whatever. You know, I was able to kind of dip my toe into a lot of different things. And I think that's helped me a lot as an adult, just generally, but also as an actor, because I think there's, you know, I'm whatever the role is, I've been able to bring kind of my different interests and stuff to it. So yeah, I wasn't necessarily a huge comic book fan per se, but of course, you know, cartoons and the movies, you know, were always big. I mean, the Super Friends on USA, I remember watching, and obviously the Tim Burton Batman and all that early, the 90s stuff.
So you kind of like the live action, the animation kind
of
things.
I tended to move towards that.
Did the interest in acting come in? Because was there something that you saw? Was there a movie? Was there an actor and actress that inspired you to get into these things? Or was somebody you knew kind of got you in acting?
That's a good question. For me, it was like innate. It was just who I was. I mean, when I was a kid, I did, you know, plays for the family and the, you know, my cousins.
Unofficial, not yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We would do stuff in the living room. And then, you know, I remember going, we had a old theater. If you've ever seen the movie Hoosiers, there's a shot of it says the Avon. It's that great old marquee, and it's our theater in Lebanon, Indiana, that I would go to, and I would sit there and watch movies like Back to the Future or, you know, Pet Sematary. I remember just being scared out of my mind by that one. But seeing these movies and being just, there was this, like, I don't know how to describe it other than this kind of feeling deep inside, like, that's what I need to be on that screen.
Like, okay, so you, how old are you at this point?
I mean, 11. Like, you know, like I'm in elementary school,
yeah.
Middle school. Like, it's, and before, look, the performance thing happened early. My first performance was in the second grade talent show. I sang Grandma's Feather Bed.
Okay.
and then people applauded, and I was like, oh, that's great.
Okay, so you were on the stage at that point. So it was that instant feedback, that
absolutely,
gratification from the audience.
And also just the joy of the performance. I love to sing. I love to be a part. We were lucky in my little elementary in Indiana. We had a local couple that did original kids' plays, musicals. And so we were kind of like the test subjects, and they test them out on us. We had this, in fifth grade, I had this really great, it was called the Animal Spring Dance. And I was the owl who was the dean of Animal U. And so I had to memorize lines, and I had to sing songs. And, you know, so I got a really early taste of it. And it just felt like, and the fun thing was, then I end up getting to college, and then you're like, well, you can't be an actor. Like, you know, I'm going to be a broadcast journalist, because that was the legitimate way to be on camera,
right,
you know,
right.
Like I would be a sportscaster. And then I did.
Well, it was David Letterman was a weatherman,
yeah,
in Indiana,
right, exactly.
So it was like, that's how you got in radio.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Absolutely. But I learned pretty quickly after I did an internship at the CBS affiliate in Indianapolis, and then at C-SPAN, which was exactly as boring as you think it was. and I'm like, this is not me. This is ridiculous. So yeah, I kind of found a back end way. I took a part time job and moved after I graduated to LA, and the rest is history. So it was something for me, like, because people say, like, I want to be an actor. What do? I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was just, I was drawn. It was like, it was preordained.
So we say I moved to LA because I talk to actors and actresses all the time, and these stories are mind blowing to me. And it'd be interesting to see if yours are similar too. They're like, I moved to LA with $50 in my pocket, and I'm thinking, how do you move to LA with $50 in your pocket without moving back? So when you say, well, it was just like a little thing around the corner and just went to LA, like, were you broke? Did you wait tables? Like, what? Like, how
no,
did you?
I was a youth director at a church on the corner of Colfax and Moore Park, which you've seen in so many shows and movies. It's, you know, one of those classic red brick churches with the white pillars, and it's been in everything. It was the Seventh Heaven Church, if you remember that show back in the day.
But, you have the theme song for us at the ready?
No, I don't have that one.
just talking.
Exactly. But, I made like $15,000 a year part time, and I said, I can only do this if you find me a place to live. So they found me a place with a church member, this 80-year-old guy who lived in the Hollywood Hills, but like his house was like the same as it was in 1945. So it wasn't a super fancy by any stretch. But he charged me $200 a month, and I lived in like the room that his sister had lived in before she moved to the nursing home the week before. And so I was like taking the old lady underwear out of the drawers and putting mine in doilies, and I was like, oh, what am I doing?
Well, okay, that's what I want to ask. So, like, at that point, are you like questioning career choices, or are you just like, you know what? I know I got to pay my dues. I'm just going to keep moving forward. Like, what kept you going?
I think the way I did it was like, it was just like every 6 months I would check in, like, okay, I'm going to give it 6 months, and if I hate it, then I'll go home.
Right.
And I kept my Indiana license plates for like 3 years. So I'm like, I mean, I may be going back. I don't know. You know, and then good things kept happening every 6 months to keep me going.
When did Malcolm in the Middle come in?
That was at the, that's a good question. I arrived after I graduated, so like June, and then I think I got that job in the fall of that year, or maybe the winter, like somewhere around there. And that story of how I got that job is hilarious and very true. It was one of my early auditions, and I went in to play a cadet at the military. Have you guys ever seen Malcolm in the Middle? You know what I'm talking about? Okay.
Great show.
So it was a great show, and people didn't, you know, it was a new show. People didn't know it was going to work. But the oldest boy is at military school. So I'm auditioning to play a guy at military school, tough cadet number two. And I go in, and I don't know if you know this, but in the audition process, oftentimes you have a whole bunch of people in the room, directors, producers, writers, casting, you know, the whole thing. And so in this particular case, it was full. And with CBS Radford Studios, like, the couch is full, like, there's a guy sitting on the end of the couch, and there's a, you know, and it's a small room. So, you know, you're nervous anyway. I'm sweating, and I get in there. And so the line was, I'm supposed to stand there, and I look out down the hallway, and then I say, Commandant on the floor 10 Hutt, and I salute. And that's how the thing starts, and then it goes from there. So I'm all ready, and they're like, Drew, you ready? Okay, hey, how's it going, everybody? Fine. They're like looking at their paper or whatever. And I start, and I say, Commandant on the floor, 10 Hutt, and I hit myself in the eye so hard. I'm like, son of a... the B word. And the guy that was sitting on the end of the arm of the couch literally fell off onto the ground because he was laughing so hard. I don't know if they thought I did that on purpose, but I got the job, and that got me in the union, and the rest is history.
But is it?
The best eye stab that ever happened.
But isn't that part of it is just like something that makes you memorable? Like, I know, you know, they always talk about, I think it was, was it Margot Kidder going in for Lois Lane, and just like going in cowboy boots, and something completely opposite, and it's just like, that's like, something's different about this person. Exactly. You know, I don't know if they're clumsy or they do it on purpose or whatever.
I know. And I always hear the stories of Danny DeVito, like when he went in audition for Taxi. Went in and like, you know, slammed his thing on the desk and was cursing. And the thing is, you hear those stories when they work, but there's a whole bunch of stories where people do that and like, you're freaking nuts.
Fair enough.
I did that one time.
This guy's selling property out of it. Yeah, right.
So, because I always thought, like, oh, I should really do something like that. And I had an audition for a movie where I was playing this, like, weird kind of dark Appalachian psychopath. And so I went in with this like, kind of white tank top all messed up. And my hair was greasy. And I even, like, yellowed my teeth. And I'm sitting there in the waiting room. And everybody's looking like, what is this dude? What a weirdo. And it's not me. Like, then, like, I go in there. I'm like, hey, how's it going, everybody? Like, it's like... They just, I was like, yeah, and I didn't get the job, and I was horrible, and I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore. However, there are times when, you know, you have to bring a little something extra, you know.
Well, one of the jobs you did get, something worked, was the Ponderosa. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. So I'm trying to gauge the age range in the room here.
Like, everything out here.
I do remember in syndication, I will say that, I do remember syndication, the original.
Yeah,
so you got a chance. So this was the prequel show too, and you got to play the role of Haas. How did that come about?
That was great. Yeah, that's another.
This is another story. Stepping stones. It just keeps you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. That was I'd done Malcolm in the Middle. I'd done 13 episodes, which was great because I guess the finish of that story was I went from tough cadet number two to cadet Drew. They gave me my own name, and I did 13 episodes, and that was so cool to be a part of that show. It was kind of a groundbreaking show. It was you know, really in terms of single camera comedy, it was really special. I'm working with Bryan Cranston, you know, and Jane Krasinski, and
Krasowski?
Yeah.
Was it
Krakowski? Jane Krakowski. John Krasinski, Jane Krakowski.
Yes. Could work with John Krasinski.
I worked with him too. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so that was a great experience. And then, so the audition process for, and that's the thing, guys. Actors have a lot of crazy audition stories because it's freaking crazy to audition. You know, those of you actors in the room understand that. This was a role originally written for a 15-year-old young Hoss Cartwright. And my agent called, like, you have to go in. This is made for you. And I actually had a guy, my first 2 weeks in L.A., stop me on the street and said, if they ever make a remake of Bonanza, you should play Hoss. And I didn't even really know what he was talking about. And I looked it up. I'm like, what an asshole. Like, how dare you? So ugly. The jaw and the hair. And
I kind of liked him. I thought maybe it was a compliment, but you know, take it for whatever.
It's true. No, I saw the resemblance.
All right.
So I go in for this audition, and he's supposed to be 15. So it's me, and this is not a joke, I swear to you. It's me and a whole bunch of like 12-year-old chubby kids in like cowboy hats and vests with their moms. And I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm in the wrong place. And I get up to leave. And I get to the door. This sounds like it's not a word of lie. I get to the door, and the casting director comes out, or it's like the casting assistant comes out, and is like, stop! And I turn around, and she's like, get in here. I'm like, okay. So she takes me in, and it's Jackie Birch, who is this great old casting director. I think she's in Atlanta now. Anyway, so she's like, let me look at you. And they're both been like talking, and I'm sitting in the chair, and they're like, maybe if you put Vaseline on his face. I'm like, what? And you're like, okay. And then we read, and then you're like, and then like that was it. Like basically I went and met David Dortor, the original creator, and Beth Sullivan, who then ran it, and I got the job. I didn't have to test or anything. It was they just rewrote it a little older, and that was it.
Did you get my
wife on that job? So that was the life.
Well, I was gonna say that was the yeah. So did you go back and like watch old episodes? And
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay. So
and quickly learned how to ride a horse.
Oh, so you didn't? Oh, is this one of those actors? Because they always say, "Can you ride a horse?"
Yeah, like,
and they're like, "I can ride a horse, of course." And then you walk out, and you're like,
"Horse
riding for dummies or something?"
Yeah,
yeah. You know? Yeah, you're right.
I mean, look, I grew up in the country, so I've been on horses, but you know. Right. Me and my buddies, like, we were playing A-team in the hayloft. We weren't riding the horses. But,
quick your learning curve?
I loved it.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, Australia in particular has, the way that they have great wranglers, generally. They're known. Their horsemen are some of the best in the world. And so we had these great guys that really taught us the right way to ride a horse, and I loved it, and I miss it. I still miss it.
Adding to that skill set. Well, yeah, yeah. Westerns, there's always different Westerns coming back. So, what would be your ideal Western to be in?
That's a good
funny
question.
Western, like Seth MacFarlane, kind of funny Western, or do you want to do Clint Eastwood, like Down and Dirty?
I would love to do an old school Western, like something like 3:10 to Yuma, like you know, one of those great old fashioned Westerns would be fun. Down and Dirty and gritty and Six Shooter and
crowdfunding now. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
so
this is
it.
Yeah.
Do you folks have any questions? We're going to turn this over. We're going to talk about Gotham, but anything you want. There's a microphone right in the middle here, so you can come on over. Yep, and everybody can line up however they want.
Or just speak real loud.
Or just speak, yeah. And then, your name?
I can do either one, but my name's Marilyn Olson.
Hey, Marilyn.
Yes. Good to see you here.
I just wanted to comment. I actually grew up with the original. And I actually grew up in Lake Tahoe, where the Ponderosa Ranch was.
Yes.
Did you ever get to see that?
You know, we had my first ever convention years ago was a Bonanza convention in Lake Tahoe.
There's a Bonanza convention?
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
I don't think there is anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore, but it was great fun growing up there.
Yeah, I bet. I think it was either gone. We didn't make it there for the... And when we were there, I don't know if it was still there. This was 2002, maybe.
Maybe gone by then.
Yeah, but it was great to be up there. I mean, here we're shooting the Great American Western in Australia, where we literally had to stop for cockatoos and kangaroos. Like, I remember doing this emotional scene where the mother had died, and they're like, "Cut!" I'm like, "What?" I was like, "I was feeling it." And like, "Well, there's a wallaby going through the back of the shot." They're going to get somebody to shoo the wallaby away. Like, really?
Can they just CG that out
later? Yeah, this is early days.
Oh, okay, all right,
this is 2001.
Fair enough, yeah.
They were already CGIing all the mountains.
The vista, the vista in the background.
They don't have mountains like Tahoe in Australia.
Okay.
But it was a special show, no doubt. There's a reason that was one of the longest running shows of all time. I mean, And that show was the first show they ever did in color. I mean, David Dortort told me this story. He was 92 at the time. He was telling stories. It was amazing about how he put up $1 million of his money and Ford put up $1 million because they wanted to show their cars in color. Mm-hmm. So then they colorized the show, which meant they colorized the commercials. And, you know, so many great stories about that.
Yeah, a lot
and
of
now I didn't realize until more recently that Dan Blocker's son is on... what's the show on Fox, the funny show with Andy Samberg? Yeah,
yep.
99. What, 99? Something 99.
Brooklyn 99.
Thank you.
Yep.
Dirk Blocker. So, yeah, it's cool that there's still a Blocker running around doing stuff in TV business.
You've got an amazing voice. Do you want to do any recording? Have you? Do you have a band?
I am a very... I do have a band. We made a... It's a garage band, and we would when I lived in LA, I had a friend that lived in South Central, and nobody ever called the cops down there, so we would play until the wee hours of the night, and then we made a web series about a bunch of middle-aged dudes in a band called Man Jam. So if you go to manjamtheseries.com, don't go to manjam.com. That's something totally. I'm warning you now.
I was wondering. Thank you for clarifying.
It's like it's a little web series. So it's like 5-minute episodes. And now that I've moved back to LA, maybe we'll get to do some more. But yeah, I love just saying, always have, you know, do some voiceover here and there, especially as I get older and deeper. Welcome. Yeah, thank you.
And you'll be doing the Bonanza theme by request. You'll be recording that later. I think downstairs at the table.
Do you know there's lyrics to that? So yes. This is no.
Do you know the lyrics too?
I do.
Okay.
Because when my first job after I graduated from high school, so I'm 18 years old, was in Indianapolis. We had a place called Union Station, the old train station that they turned into a mall that they did back then. And I was part of the dance troupe, and we did our whole summer. You know, you'd come out like 8 times a day on the weekends. Uh-huh. And we did a TV theme song show. So it was 30 minutes of all TV theme songs, complete with choreography and the whole thing. You should have seen me. I had the black pants and the neon shirt. It was it was totally 90s. But one of the songs was Bonanza, and it's, we got a right to pick a little fight, Bonanza. If anyone fights any one of us, he's got to fight all three. And
oh, go on. Please, more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, that'll be recorded downstairs at your table. You're handing out CDs.
If you want your outgoing message.
to be the theme from Bonanza.
To be the theme.
We have another question?
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name is Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
So, I have a theory about Grundy. So, at the end of season 4, we saw that the villains were claiming their territory, and Oswald claimed his territory. And I recognized the territory that he claimed because in the Batman video game, he had a basement where he was keeping Grundy, and when Batman got in Penguin's way, he opened up the basement, and there was a boss fight where you had to fight Grundy.
Right.
So, I have a feeling that Oswald is going to either bring Grundy back, or Grundy's going to end up coming back.
I think that's a great idea. If you could write to the writers, reach him on Twitter at Gotham Writers. I think that's a great
idea. The showrunner, the email for the showrunner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
John Stevens and or Danny Cannon and Bruno Heller. I like that. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Thank you. I hope
you're right.
Isn't that fantastic how you can kind of get, like, everybody's got all these different theories, and you've got all these characters that we know and love, and we have to see the building blocks as you're getting to them, and almost anything can happen, because, you know, Solomon Grundy exists, so we know he's not dead. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure you're coming back. Yeah,
it's funny. What? That's right.
He's got to fight Batman.
He's got to fight Batman. Although,
Green Lantern, too, right, or something? What's the original?
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what... Because he was made out of wood, plant matter from the swamp, and that's why the Green Lantern's ring couldn't affect him.
There you go. So maybe you and Tom Cruise would be going toe-to-toe.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Let's do it.
We have a question right here. Yep.
To research the Grundy role, did you read any of the comics, or did you just go by what the script told you today?
Yeah, no, I definitely did. In fact, once I found out I got the role, so I've said this to somebody, so forgive me if you're hearing this for the second time, but so... I knew about Grundy vaguely, but then we were traveling, and my son, who was maybe 3 at the time or 4, got a Happy Meal from McDonald's. And inside they had, I think it was the Kevin Conroy Batman.
Batman animated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was a Grundy doll or figurine. And I'm reading about Grundy, and I'm reading, oh, and he can never die. And I'm thinking, aha, now that's job security. So the next time, maybe it's a few weeks later, a few days later, I can't remember, and Bruno Heller's on set, and I say, Bruno, how about if Butch becomes Grundy? And he kind of gave me that, like, Kramer look, like, no. But he didn't say anything, and then we never mentioned it again. And the whole season two goes by, and then all of season three goes by, and I've forgotten all about it. And then, sure enough, they call. John Stevens calls me and says, so we're going to shoot you in the head, but you're going to come back to Solomon Grundy. And I was like, yes. So that was really awesome. So right after that, I called DC, and I said, can you send me stuff? Because I realized after getting this job and doing a few of these conventions how important it is to the fans to, you know, get this stuff right. And, you know, I think that is important. So I really wanted to do my due diligence. And they sent me this big box that arrived at our apartment in New York. And my son and I, like, tear it open, like, Christmas morning. And there was also the original comic was there, like a copy of it. And then some of the newer comics, there was video games, there was little dolls. Like, it was...
Oh, an entire Grundy care package.
And
sweet.
My son and I were just... It was like kids at Christmas.
Man. Please tell me you kept all of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
100%. So that's we... although someone yelled at me because we opened it all. It's like, open it.
It's not making like, condition.
I'm an opener. I can't help it.
It's homework. It's
I got to play with it. Yeah. But I did... And what I found fascinating about Grundy is that, first of all, he predates Hulk by, what, 30 years or 20 years?
At least? 44 to 60, yeah, about 20-ish. 20-ish. Yeah, 2 decades.
So, you know, that was interesting to me, but also all the different iterations. They've done so many different versions of Grundy. Mm-hmm. I found the one fascinating, the one where he's in a suit and kind of looked like Butch, like this, mm-hmm. you know. So I love the idea that we had some leeway with Grundy. We really wanted to make that first scene when he comes out of the swamp. It's almost frame for frame from the original comic.
Even the sign on the swamp too, right? Isn't it almost like right out of
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I thought that was really important because this is the first time it's been done by in live action. So we really wanted to get that part right. And then from there, it's a TV show, so it's got to kind of take on its own life. But,
okay. So did you plant the seed, or had they planned that all along? And it was and you kind of guessed too, because Butch's arc. I mean, you start as a henchman. Mm-hmm. It's just such a crazy arc, and then you're a boss at one point, and then you're back to henchman again, and then shot in the head.
And mostly a lover.
I forgot that part.
He loves everybody, and it gets him in trouble.
Yes.
He loves the ladies.
So do you think they had that arc to begin with, or do you think you planted that seed?
You know, I don't know. I've never found out the answer to that. I know that they were kind of waiting to hear from DC if they could use that property, and then they kind of found out, you know, towards the end of season three that they could. But I don't know. You know, okay. I would have thought I would have found out, but no one's ever really told me officially how that came to be.
Is it one of those things you don't want to ask? You just want to enjoy the experience and just be happy
exactly.
that it happens?
So. I don't know. I'll take credit for it. Yeah.
Let's talk about that arc for Butch then too. Like, how did you approach the characters season to season? Because you obviously, okay, they're not going to say... Yeah. You know, day one, okay, you're going to do this, but over here you're going to be Solomon. I mean, that didn't happen. So how do you approach season by season just taking this arc? Because this guy's all over the map. I mean, he really is. I mean, like you said, heart of gold, but it's just so many changes and twists.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it really from season to season, it was a little different. I mean, season one was very much about the mob. Yeah, you had Maroney, you had Falcone. And so for me, the first iteration of Butch was really, I watched a lot of Sopranos. I watched a lot of James Gandolfini, particularly early Sopranos. I thought, you know, what he did to create this gangster who you've actually really rooted for, even while he did these horrible things, was great, you know. And like, a lot of people have done that, but he did it really well. And then I was trying to get a hold of the character. I'll never forget, we were doing a wardrobe fitting for the pilot, and I couldn't quite figure out. The one thing Bruno told me was, you know, the thing about Butch is people underestimate him until it's too late. You know, they think they know about this guy, but then they don't know that he's more clever than people give him credit for. And he's a survivor. Like, he's lived in this, you know, scrapped his way through, you know, a lot of time with fish, you know, in this kind of crazy city. So I'm doing the wardrobe fitting at Steiner Studios, and the wardrobe designer gave me these white, like, George Jefferson vintage loafers, and I had these like super thin socks from 1950 or something. You know, like, and I put that on, and I was like, oh, that's it. He's this like sharp dressed guy, and he has these over the top kind of, you know, suits and stuff, and everybody thinks he's kind of like, you know, like Paulie from Sopranos, but he's really, you know, and that really kind of brought it into focus for me. That's what's cool about, I think, the craft of acting, particularly for anyone, stage, theater, film, that there's a lot of ways you can get into a character, you know. For Grundy, it was all about becoming physically more fit, and you know, I really worked hard with a trainer to kind of...
How many weeks did you have by the time you found out to the time you were Grundy?
Well, I found out, at the end of the season, but then none of it was confirmed, and you know, right. It's, you know,
and you didn't know how they were going to do it.
Exactly.
It could
I had
be,
no idea. Exactly. Yeah. So from the time they're like, "Yeah, you're coming out of the swamp naked," you're like, "Jeez."
That was 7 weeks.
So yeah, I got with my trainer Don Saladino and Tiago at this place called Drive 495, which does everybody. They do, you know, Ryan Reynolds for Deadpool. And it's great. And Sebastian Stan is part of our workout group, and you know, just see all these guys in there.
So beer gone.
Yeah, exactly. It was 7 weeks of hell is what it was. I never forget.
It wasn't during football season, was it?
No, it was right about this time last year. So it was like August. Okay. I think I started shooting in the beginning of August. So I'll never forget, though, that scene coming out of the swamp. That was the nakedest of all the scenes. In the middle of the night, Staten Island, it took 5.5 hours to put all that makeup on. And plus the wig and the whole bit. And I had, you know, I hadn't eaten for, you know, eaten anything other than like lettuce and
kale.
Yeah. And so I finished, and it was like, I want to say 4 in the morning, and the PAs had a pizza for me. And that was the best pizza I ever ate in my life. In the trailer. It was cold. I didn't care. It was like, that was the greatest thing in the world. So,
starving man in the desert. It's just like, here it is. The like Ritz cracker is going to be awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah. But that was important to me. So, like, for Butch, you know, it was about the clothes. And that was the way for me to get into that character. So, yeah. And then he did. He took arcs, you know. I really thought it was cool, the love story with Tabby, because I think a lot of people didn't see that coming. And I think it was interesting, you know. Generally, it's like the square-jawed, you know, hero gets the beautiful girl, but I love that it's this kind of this dude Butch, you know, and he gets this beautiful girl, and they have this weird relationship, and they, you know.
Well, I think that's the difference with Gotham is that you just don't. It's you expect. Oh, we know Batman. We know all this. We know, and then but you don't expect any of these things.
Yeah.
To happen. You never know what's coming. Probably even as an actor, you probably do. Are you always like flipping the scripts during the season to see if you made it all the way?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Are you kidding? Okay. I never forget season one, we had this scene with Zaz when Zaz first shows up, and I'm reading the thing, and it's like, you know, Zaz is, you know, chasing Butch through the hallway, and he shoots him, and there was a page turn. I'm like, oh. Shoots him, and then I turn the page. In the knee!
In the knee! He shoots him in the knee! Job security stuff. Yeah. That's amazing.
And that was the first of 4 different times Butch got shot.
I was going to say, Butch is always getting shot and he keeps coming back. That's why I'm sure you're going to be coming back for the next season. Do we have any more questions?
Robin.
That's a great Robin costume, too.
I'm Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Rachel.
How are you?
I'm good. If you had the opportunity as Butch Guildine to rule over Gotham, have complete control, but you had to share half of the city with either Oswald
Cobblepot
or Edward Newmonk, who would you choose
and why? Great question.
Oh, wow.
That's a very good question.
Coming after one of the guys shot you. So
I know,
yeah.
Exactly. To me, it would be Oswald. I think as Butch Guildine, I mean, the Butch hated Ed and always did. Now, Grundy and Ed had that great little connection, which I thought was so much fun. Corey and I had so much fun with that. I remember that scene in the alley was like the first real Grundy scene outside of the swamp thing. And we didn't know, like, I didn't know how to do Grundy. Grundy's hard because it's like, you know, I remember listening. Somebody, thank God for YouTube, somebody had put together all the different voiceovers for Grundy, including Hamill and all the different ones. And I was listening to all the different versions, trying to come up with what my version would be. And, you know, and so I was nervous about getting it right because it's important. This is not Butch. I could do whatever I want. You know, he's my own character. Now, Grundy, if you screw that up, you're never going to hear the end of it. And Corey was great because he was helpful. I was able to say, like, how's this looking, man? And he's like, yeah, no, it's good. Don't worry. It's going well. But also that relationship of, like, Ed, Dumb Ed and Dumb Solomon was so much fun to play. But to answer your question, which is a good one, it would definitely be Oswald, although he'd probably build a wall and keep that sneaky son of a bitch on the other side. Thank you so much. Thanks for watching.
I know a buddy of mine loves the show, Ron Longo. He had mentioned, because we mentioned there's 10 episodes coming up for the next season.
Yeah.
Let's play act. Let's just assume you're going to be in it, even if you're not, if you're just hanging around the set. There's so many things that they have to wrap up.
Yeah.
I mean, they really did a lot, especially Gotham, always as they build up to the finale. There's so many crazy things going on. We see all these supervillains coming out.
Yeah.
I think we saw a hint of the Bat Signal, you know, different things coming up too. David Mazouz, he's practicing his Batman voice all the time. Every time I talk to him, he's practicing the Batman voice. How do you think they are going to wrap up all these loose ends in 10 episodes? How would you like to see them wrap things up?
I've always said that I think the last shot of the show is, you know, Bruce putting on the cowl. Like, that's it. Like, the official rule. To me, that's the end of the show. Because the show is not about Batman. It's about Gotham. And that's in the name. And so it's about the devolving of this city into the cesspool that needed the mass vigilante. So I think, you know, I know people want to see Batman on TV, but I think, I'm not 100% sure you can put Batman on TV. I think it's a big screen thing, you know. I may be wrong about that. Maybe you could, on HBO or something, you could do something really cool and dark. But for this case, for this show, that to me is where it ends. So I think it will be a large part about him getting to that point, which, you know, he's still a kid, but, you know, I don't know how they'll make that work, but they can. And then about, I think they're going to follow that storyline, what's the storyline when they blow up all the bridges?
No Man's Land.
I think they'll follow some of that. But you're right, there's a lot of, that's what people have been saying, like, oh, you're going to come back? I'm like, well, my loose end is tied up. They got a lot of other loose ends that they got to tie up.
What would you like to see them do with Butch / Solomon Grundy / Cyrus?
I mean, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. I mean, it would have to come back as Grundy because, you know, Butch is dead. Although, you never know.
You dump him in the swamp again, you know what I mean?
Dump him in the swamp and come back as Grundy for the big final push.
But you think there could be like a supervillain throwdown, like that's Grundy's a part of? Like, what would you do with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it could go either way. It's hard to wrap up a show, as we all know. We all have our shows that we love, and we know that sometimes they're able to do it and sometimes they aren't. But I don't know. I would love to be a part of that, but I don't know. I'm going to be watching like a fan, like anybody else. Like, how are they going to do this? I know for sure that there's a big thing that happens in the first episode back that I can't tell you about, but that is like...
Big thing for Gotham, or big thing in the world of like comic book fans will go, oh my goodness, they did that.
A big thing happens to a character, and that will be surprising, I think.
That's gonna be amazing. What's been your favorite part of this entire journey on Gotham?
Good question. Well, I think there'd be two things. One is what I kind of said before is true, that we have this unique experience as a cast that we got along so well. And that doesn't always happen. In fact, it happens a lot less than you'd think. So the connection, the camaraderie with this group was really special. And I don't think that I'll have that again like that anyway. The other was actually this, like being a part of this fandom, this genre of the entertainment business where I get to kind of interact. You know, I've done a lot of shows, a lot of different things in my career, but this was the show that gave me access, you know, to this world. And I've liked it so much more than I thought I would. I've really appreciated, you know, the interaction with the fans. I've appreciated how passionate they are about stuff, about the storyline. And that's really fun because I think oftentimes TV and film, you kind of do in a vacuum. You shoot it, and especially TV, you know, you're not going to do a big press tour. You just shoot it, and it happens, and people watch it in their living room, and they like it or they don't. And, you know, if you don't, unless you're watching, reading Twitter, you don't know. So in this case, to be able to do something, and then to have this kind of a vehicle to be able to talk to fans and hear what they have to say, and I love it when families come up and tell me they watched together, or I've had guys stop me like, oh, thank you for making a show that my girlfriend will watch with me, or vice versa. You know, it's really special. So that's been a really great surprise.
What's coming up next for you? What can we look forward to?
Well, I shot two movies literally right after I finished on Gotham. One for Lifetime about the Slender Man killings, if you've ever heard of that. Yeah, it was pretty intense. And then one about the, I think I mentioned before, about the Unabomber called Ted K, that I think will make the festival circuits.
Hopefully. This is going to be 2018? Are we looking at 2019 when we can
see
these?
I don't know. You never know in these things.
Okay.
Like, I think the Lifetime one was supposed to be this summer, but I haven't seen it yet. So.
Okay.
And then Ted K would be, what? No, I'm not Ted. No, I'm not Ted. I'm his neighbor, but it's really fun. Charlton Copley plays Ted, and he's incredible in it. So
okay, and you mentioned fun. Twitter. It's at the Drew Powell.
Yes.
That's going to be, so any of these things that are coming up, we're going to find
Absolutely.
Out about it.
Yep.
If you happen to tweet something out on the set of Gotham, we'll know that you're coming back.
Yeah, you've got to be careful these days.
I know. Yeah, be very careful with what you tweet out. So, and you're going to be downstairs signing some more, or are you heading?
Absolutely.
You're going to be downstairs.
Yeah, I'll be here. Yep. It's funny. I just moved to Los Angeles last week. So I was, we kind of got unpacked and took my son to school for the first day, and then got on a plane and came back east. So, so I got to get on the plane to head back to LA, but not till like
a few more, a little bit. Yeah, you're gonna be signing. So, well, thank you so much for your time on Gotham and for bringing this iconic character to life, man. That is so much fun. Thank you for being here for
a
terrific
idea. I really appreciate it. Appreciate it. Wait, we got to finish on a song. What's our song?
What was the?
Just sit right back and hear a tale of April trip. It started with the big one of on his honey ship.
Okay, kids, that wraps up things for another year of Terrificon here on Comic Book Central. My thanks to the man behind the show. He puts on an amazing event each and every year. Mitch Halleck, his entire crew, everyone that works for him there at Terrificon, all the volunteers, man. Everyone who attended. If you attended Terrificon, man, you're a part of the process. That show gets bigger and better every year. Man, folks are just loving it. It is amazing. Terrificon.com. That is where you go to find out more about the show. Plans are already underway for 2019. It's going to be even bigger, even better. Go to the website, follow them on social media. I hope to see some of you folks there in 2019 as well. My thanks also to the guests who joined me here on the show for these past 5 episodes. Man, there were a lot of them if you haven't heard them. There were a bunch. Ming Chen, Sam Jones, Charlie Schlatter, Lou Ferrigno, Jonathan and Paul Souls, Henry Winkler, Mark Guggenheim, Michael Jai White, Palm Clementieff, Greg Sipes, Kari Payton, Raphael Ferrer, Larry Kenny, and Drew Powell. And of course, my thanks to each and every one of you out there for checking out every episode of Comic Book Central and for sharing the lair on social media. Folks, I appreciate everything you do out there. I appreciate your support of the show. Thank you so much. Now, again, if you missed any of my look back at Terrificon, or if you just want to check out some past episodes of the show as well, Charlie Schlatter and Paul Souls, they were guests this year, in-depth interviews with them. Lou Ferrigno, I've also chatted with him right here on the show. So Sam Jones has been here a bunch of times. So if you want to check out those in-depth interviews, they're out there as well. ComicBookCentral.net, that's where you go. Also, blogtalkradio.com/ComicBookCentral in the archives at both websites. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play, the lairs everywhere. All the episodes are out there. So many out there. So if you missed a few episodes, you can go back and check them out there. All right. I am out of here, folks, for this week. Taking a little break right now from the show, but I'm not planning on taking it easy. I'm gearing up, man. I'm gearing up to take the show on the road once again, hitting the road once again with Comic Book Central, a little bit closer to home this time. As many of you know, you loyal listeners out there, you know I take the show on the road again to the Cincinnati Comic Expo. That is another amazing event. So many guests are going to be at that one as well. Looks like I'm going to be recording not only a lot of content there with some of the folks there, but I'm going to be moderating a lot of Q&As there as well, right there in the Queen City. So more details coming up on that. Be sure to follow Comic Book Central on social media. What I can say is that for the next episode, I don't have an air date yet,
getting soon, though. I am planning a Cincinnati Comic Expo preview on the very next episode of Comic Book Central. I'm hoping to bring you an in-depth interview with one of the featured guests for the Cincinnati Comic Expo. If you head to the website, CincinnatiComicExpo.com, check out their guest list, you might be able to figure out who it is. I've been trying to get this person on the show for quite a while. Looks like it's going to happen, but, you know, until I lock it in, I don't want to announce it. When I lock it down, I will mention it on social media. I will also mention the air date of that episode so you can get a preview of the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Stay tuned for that. And look, and folks, until you hear from me again, man, keep planning on attending any comic book conventions near you. They are way cool. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
I've got a flair for women everywhere. Bonanza!
Bonanza!
And when I call on Lady Gadalol, she's gonna welcome me.
Too much noise. Can't sleep.
I'm not afraid of any pretty maid. Bonanza! Bonanza! When I give a kiss to any pretty miss, she'll learn a lot from me. 1-4-4-4-4-1. This we guarantee. We got a right to pick a little fight. Bonanza! Bonanza! If anyone fights any one of us,